This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection has subpoenaed a top Republican in Wisconsin. We have the latest on what the committee wants to hear. Plus, a pair of lawsuits targeting a get-out-the-vote effort in Milwaukee and absentee ballot envelopes. And who has more money in the bank? What the latest fundraising reports tell us. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 30th. Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., this week started out with a boom on Monday with news that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was subpoenaed by the January 6th House Committee, which, of course, is investigating the insurrection that occurred in 2020 on January 6th at the U.S. Capitol. So he was subpoenaed over a phone call that he had with former President Donald Trump 2 months ago. And Voss has openly talked about that phone call, that it was in related to Trump asking him and other Republicans to overturn the 2020 election. Now, of course, we know there is no legal pathway to do that. So Voss was, in a statement, said that he was surprised to be issued this, but also saying, because he called it political, given how close we are to the midterms, that subpoena seems to be more about partisan politics than actual fact-finding. So he sued to basically block the subpoena. His deposition that was also scheduled for Monday was canceled. We don't know if it's going to be rescheduled. That's a whole nother issue to talk about in a little bit. But basically, his lawsuit is arguing that it infringes on his legislative immunity and overall just lacks purpose. So where this goes from here, I think that's the next big question. We know that there is going to be a trial starting in later of October, and that will be the next step. But whether or not this gets rescheduled is kind of the big question, if he will ever be called for a deposition, because it seems like the January 6th committee is kind of trying to wrap up. They canceled a big televised hearing this week that was scheduled for Thursday due to Hurricane Ian. So that's kind of what we're looking forward to next.
And Voss brought up that televised hearing that was scheduled in his lawsuit. He was served on Saturday of last weekend, was asked to basically either appear in D.C. on Monday or do a video deposition by Monday at 9 a.m. Central Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. He argued that this was all about trying to create media clips for that televised hearing on Wednesday. Now, looking at this legal fight, the first question we have is, does the federal judge in Milwaukee have standing to hear this case? Is there authority for her to shut down a subpoena from Congress? I don't know. I've often said I'm not a lawyer. I've also never seen this filed in Wisconsin before. That's a unique question. Then two, Voss's argument is this is outside the purview of the committee. The committee's work is to investigate what happened on January 6, 2021, not a phone call in July of 2022. Politically, for Voss, this shows there's no upside to humoring Donald Trump, right? I mean, think about the last year and a half of what Voss has been through with Trump. He announced right ahead of the 2021 GOP state convention that they were going to have this like independent investigation of the election. That came on the heels of Trump basically ripping into GOP legislative leaders for not doing enough to, you know, stop the steal. He went through all these indignities of like getting ripped by Trump during the Gabel investigation, the negative publicity about what Gabel's probe found or didn't find, how Gabel conducted himself, the legal bills and the cost to taxpayers of this. And for Voss, you're getting squeezed on both sides. For Democrats, you did just enough to humor Trump to make you kind of part of the problem. For the hardcore base, you didn't go far enough to do what Trump wanted you to do because you're not embracing the entire overturning the election results because that can't be done. So you are once again in no man's land without really anybody on either side happy with you, except for those in the middle who quietly say, we can't do this. Republicans, we can't do this, but we can't speak up because of Trump's wrath.
It seems like it's just a story that is continuing here in Wisconsin politics, and this is kind of the next phase, and we'll see what happens. I believe that hearing is set for October 24th in federal court in Milwaukee. So we'll be covering that and keeping people updated on that as well. Also this week, there was kind of a slew of lawsuits that we're going to cover. We're going to first start with the one that Wisconsin, I should say the Republican Party of Wisconsin, filed a lawsuit over what's called Milwaukee Votes 2020. Now, this is seeking to shut down that organization, which is privately funded. It's like an effort to boost voter turnout. And they argue in the lawsuit that involvement from city officials is violating state law. loss. So those city officials they're targeting is specifically Mayor Johnson. And they're saying this is kind of like the frustration over the Zuckerbucks mm-hmm. issue that we've often talked about, that that funneled millions into communities during the pandemic to help aid election clerks and city officials to run elections during a pandemic. So this is kind of the next phase, that once they got heard of this, of Milwaukee Votes, they kind of think this is Zuckerbucks 2.0. So they're suing to stop this effort. Jeff Fleming, who's a spokesman for Mayor Cavalier Johnson, basically said that there's been absolutely no work by the mayor's office to fund this effort, to be any part of it. Now, he did say he wanted to post it on his website, so there's been kind of this back and forth, and that's kind of the sticking point for Republicans right now, is that they just don't want to see this effort be carried out.
Johnson opened the door to this by talking about the city promoting it.
Mm-hmm.
It raised questions. Well, are you funding it? Are you getting money for this? What's going on? And then the response afterward opened the door even more to what you're seeing now. Now, the Republican Party filed a lawsuit originally seeking records from conversations, communications between the city and the people involved in this effort. They filed that lawsuit 2 weeks after making the request. You and I know that usually we wait more than 2 weeks mm-hmm. for most open records requests. The records came the day after that, became the basis of this lawsuit, saying that they are illegally coordinating this. Now, I don't know if that's actually happening, right? We'll find out through the court proceedings what's going on. There's a hearing scheduled for October. But it looks bad. Sachin Chetta is a Democratic operative. He has run campaigns for years. He's involved in lots of stuff. He's also an advisor to Cavalier Johnson and helped him with his mayoral campaign. Text messages from the open records request show Sachin talking with Jeff Fleming about how to respond to these media requests, right? What should the message be? It's perfectly normal for a longtime advisor to tell a client, hey, this is what I think you should be saying. But the appearance of a Democratic operative advising on city business is part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's also this component where these nonprofit groups who are actually doing the GOTV effort, right, they are kind of working with this firm run by Melissa Baldoff, who is also a Democratic operative. Now, she is not conducting, her group is not running the operation. It's just kind of helping them coordinate. But again, there's more smoke there for Republicans to say, there's something going on here. This is more like a privately funded effort to turn out Democrats. Democrats will tell you this is about getting people to vote in the city. Isn't that what you want, is for everybody to vote? Well, for Republicans, the reality is no. They don't want all Milwaukee to vote,
they
right?
They don't. Yeah, it's a powerhouse.
But they also have legitimate concerns about whether this is being run appropriately. Now, I don't know if it is or if it is not. Republicans you talk to are going to bring up the John Doe investigation of Scott Walker. These things kind of get lines blurred over years. With Walker, when he was county executive, there are people on his staff who are actively doing campaign work during the day. Have we crossed the line? That was the line that was crossed back then. Is what's happening now crossing a line? We shall see. I don't know you're going to see a felony investigation come out of this entire thing. I also don't know if Republicans can actually shut down a privately run effort to turn people out. These are private groups.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can say the city can't be involved. You can say the city is, you know, inappropriately helping them. But how do you tell private groups they can't turn voters out with private money? I'm not sure how that's going to work, but I'm not a lawyer, so we shall see. Maybe I'll be surprised. But that's what to watch with this kind of weaves forward. And two, it gins up the base for Republicans. There are a lot of Republicans who are still sore over the whole privately funded effort to help turn out, to help pay for costs, put an election in a pandemic 2 years ago. This reignites that kind of rips that wound back off,
right.
Open that scab to get them fired up again.
Right, and of course we've seen legislation with them trying mm-hmm. to stop all private funds going towards elections. That bill was vetoed by Governor Tony Evers, but it could be something that we could see in a Michaels possible
yes.
administration. He has said that he would vow to sign many of the election bills that Republicans passed and Evers rejected. Another lawsuit was filed by Republicans over a veteran home in Union Grove. So this has been an issue for a while. There's mm-hmm. been a lot of issues of abuse and neglect happening at the veterans home at Union Grove. So in Waukesha County, Republicans are basically seeking records requested back in June about communications between the Evers administration and his staff related to what went on there. What was the communications going on there? So, like I mentioned, this has been a sticking point for Republicans. They are actually now handing out flyers about the abuse and neglect that happened in there to kind of energize voters in that area. And it's something that we've seen before, and this is kind of the continuation of that.
And there's another open records request, or open records lawsuit filed by Wisconsin right now, a conservative outlet, against Evers folks about records related to parole. Parole Commission, look, there's a legitimate reason to want these records. It's also a month and a half out from the election. There is a political component to this of reminding people with the Veterans Home. What, you know, they can make the argument, what is Evers hiding? And if you get the records, you can maybe find out something that gets thrown into the fire of the election right for the end. For Wisconsin right now, they report extensively on people released on parole up to the end of 2021. They want records for 2022. That would be more kindling for what they've been talking about or writing about with these people who've been released. It's again, a legitimate reason to want the records, but also a political component to it. So close an election.
Yeah, and Wisconsin right now has been issuing reports about specific names of individuals, and that's what they want. They want the names of more individuals who, you know, maybe committed heinous crimes or it doesn't look so good, but the Parole Commission has since released them on parole. We have heard from Senator Van Wangard that he's supposed to get those records today. He's also filed requests, so there might be a development on that and whether those records will be released today or not. Another lawsuit, continuation, sticking with the issue of elections. This is about defending witness addresses on absentee ballot envelopes. Cher, we've talked about this issue for a very long time, and it specifically is about clerks, whether or not they can accept a witness signature or address or it's specifically address, excuse me. If you're missing the WI for Wisconsin or the zip code, should a clerk be able to accept that? And this lawsuit said, you know, people should. It was filed in Dane County. So it's a group that encourages students to vote, filed it in Dane County Circuit Court against the State Elections Commission and Madison clerk Mary Beth Witzelbell, arguing clerks should be allowed to accept those ballot envelopes with partial witness addresses.
So remember, the Waukesha County judge ruled that you can't cure ballots anymore. We've not seen an appeal on that. I've been checking. I haven't seen it yet. If it's filed, I missed it. This lawsuit would essentially negate the impact of that curing lawsuit, okay? Follow me here. Because if you can accept a absentee ballot envelope that has enough information to get the letter where it would go, that's basically what they're asking for the standard. If I put down your name, your street and number, and Madison, it'd get to you eventually, right? It may take a while. So if I leave off the zip code, that'd be okay. Leave off the WI, that'd be okay. This is basically asking to accept those things that have just enough to figure out where this person lives. So that's what they're pushing for, because right now, the Elections Commission in 2016 issued guidance on what an address is. If I remember correctly, that guidance did not include a zip code. But that guidance does not carry the weight of law. That guidance was part of the guidance on curing absentee ballots, which no longer exists, that the commission says we didn't repeal the guidance on what constitutes an address. But that guidance no longer exists. And clerks have to figure out, what am I going to accept? Okay, there's a rub. This is asking for an order saying you can have to accept anything with this standard they're calling for. We'll see what happens with that. Poor clerks, by the way, have yet another issue to deal with a month out from election. Oh, by the way, absentee ballots are already out.
They're already out. You may have already gotten in your mailbox.
Yeah. And there's another lawsuit that was filed a week ago from a conservative group saying you should not be able to spoil your absentee ballot. Once you've sent it in, you can't change your mind. You can't go in and say, I cast this ballot. I want to rescind my ballot, vote for somebody else to change my mind, because that happened during the Democratic Senate primary.
Of course.
Elections Commission saying, hey, these three people dropped out in 1 week. If you want to go change your vote, you can. There's another thing. Another
issue.
It's
been a longstanding tradition, too. You know, if something happens or there's very negative press about a candidate and you're like, wow, I really don't want to vote for that person anymore, which we know a lot of headlines come right before on the heels of Election Day, people want to change their mind. They want to change your vote. But of course, like you said, in the U.S. Senate race, when one dropped out, two dropped out, three dropped out, well, maybe you want to. Rebuild.
The lawsuit says that state law only allows you to spoil it on your own before you send it in.
Correct.
So, again, don't know what the standard is going to be, but there's another issue for clerks to deal with absentee ballots already in mailboxes as we speak.
And if any of these will even be settled before Election Day, right? I mean, I think we're 38 days on my calendar in my head, so we'll see what happens. All right, time to nerd out, JR.
Okay.
We got a lot of fundraising numbers in here because the reports were due on Wednesday. Let's pull up the full screen. I'll just give kind of the top lines here right now. In the governor's race, Tony Evers, let's start with money raised. He has about $5.4 million. Money spent, about $6 million. Money in the bank, still about roughly $6 million. Tim Michaels, I think I have these correct. Yes, okay, because the colors are different on here.
So actually, Eva's raised a 4.5. Michael's raised a 5.4.
That seems, I have a white. For all who's watching, I have a black and white slide on here, so I couldn't see the colors. So I apologize. You'll see it here on the screen. Money raised by Evers is $4.6 million. Then in the Attorney General's race, you see those numbers right there. Clearly, Josh Call is outraising Eric Toney, his Republican opponent. So I guess, Jer, what does this money even mean for people?
In the governor's race, Toney Evers has a state Democratic Party, and Tim Michaels has his checkbook. Looking at what Evers raised, about $1.6 million came from the state party. Now, he still raised $2.9 million for individuals, which is a heck of a number. When you look, it was from July 26th to August 31st. Going back to 2018 with Scott Walker, Evers is well ahead of the pace mm-hmm. that Walker was putting up at that time. In fact, Evers has now raised $26.1 million for his campaign from January of 2021 through the end of August. That's a pretty healthy number. For Michaels, he accounted for all but $400,000 of what he raised. He's not taking off with individual donors. We kind of talked about this before, this perception of he's got a hard time getting people to give him money because he's going to self-fund. Now, the question has been, what would he put in post-primary? This period covers 2 weeks before the election, August 9th, the primary August 9th, and a couple weeks afterward. Michaels put in $3.7 million post-primary. So he's been stingy with his own money post-primary, but looking at the TV buys, he's still well behind where Evers is. In the AG race, Eric Toney is raising money a better clip than he ever has. The problem for him is the bar was set so low, it's not saying much. Josh Call had $2.2 million in the bank end of August. That is way more than I've usually seen from AG candidates at this point. The question for Call is, okay, you've got all that money, when you start spending it. The group Wisconsin Freedom Pact, which is an arm of the Republican Attorney General's Association, just laid down its first media buys. It reported the Ethics Commission this week about 500 grand or so between TV and digital. I haven't seen the creative yet, but I'm going to guess it's going to attack Josh Call on crime. For Call, the challenge is, when do you go up in this crowded environment? I mean, between the governor's race and the Senate race, according to Ad Impact, $144 million on TV between the primary and the general election. That is a lot of clutter. For Call, he's going to be up later in October. Can he break through that clutter with a memorable way with everything going on? It's a challenge. So he's got way more money, but it may not be enough to create that unique brand for him compared to the generic ballot because the governor's race and Senate race are so dominant on the airways.
Yeah, exactly. And the governor's race last week at Impact reported that the governor's race is the most expensive mm-hmm. in the country right now. Mm-hmm. I think, and maybe in a few weeks, we might see the U.S. Senate race get up there as well because there's crazy projections that I'm hearing about that as well of how much money is going to be spent in that race. And we're seeing it right now. I mean, primarily, like you mentioned, we are just seeing ad after ad, U.S. Senate, governor's race, all four candidates on the airways, but not so much with the AG's race. At least I haven't seen it yet in this area, nor the Milwaukee area, but that could come next because of how much money Josh Call has on hand.
And then with the other constitutional officers, talking about Josh Call having $2.2 million and maybe being a generic ballot contest, think about Treasurer and Secretary of State. Now, for Doug LaFollette, who was outraised, who was outspent by Amy Loudenbeck significantly. Of course, most of that for Loudenbeck came before the primary, right, when she won a three-way race. LaFollette has his name. Like, that's a well-known
dominant
Wisconsin
name.
Politics. Mm-hmm. That may be enough to create that unique brand. For the treasurer's race, I mean, they had like $15,000 in the bank and $10,000. You can't do anything to create identity for yourself with that kind of money in this environment. So that treasurer should be a true generic ballot contest come November 8th.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week. Rising, we have property values.
So, new report, Wisconsin Policy Forum, biggest increase in decades, up, I think, by 14% roughly, which, if you own a home, is great.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to buy a home,
it's horrible, let me tell you.
So, you add in rising interest rates because of the Fed and inflation, values are going through the roof. There is and the reason why they're going up is because of inflation and a insufficient stock of housing. So there's a problem. For renters, it's a problem, right? Because as landlords have their costs go up, they pass them off to renters. For the elderly, You're looking to downsize. It's harder to downsize to a more affordable home because your interest rates are going up. You're talking significant differences in your payments right now versus just a year ago. So it's great if you have a home, you're going to keep it for a while. Everybody else, not so much.
Well, Jared, that's kind of like where I'm at right now. Rent went up 12% at where I live. We're trying to look at homes, but right now is not the best place to be or best time. But what is a good time, right? I mean, the market has ebbed and flowed a little bit. Scary term, the R word I like to call recession is near, and just homes are just skyrocketing right now. Very unaffordable, at least for me. All right, mixed this week, we have Tim Michaels with this kind of slew of the pollings that we've saw this week.
So we talked about the money piece of it, right? Mm-hmm. And the challenge for Michaels is being in position to take advantage of whatever environment may come for Republicans. Now, if you look at the polling, these are incremental changes, very small. But you're seeing Ron Johnson begin to create some distance between himself and Mandela Barnes. I've yet to see a poll truly outside the margin of error. So like if it's plus or minus 3 points, right, you have to have a 6-point gap to be outside the margin for error in a race. The Fox one, for example, was 4 points. But that's a 4-point edge for Johnson versus 4 points for Mandela a month ago. So you're seeing movement. In the governor's race, it's much more subtle. And Michaels is even maybe tiny bit, you know, a point or two, which is insignificant, speaking of statistics, you know, in a poll, or like a point or two behind. He's not getting the same boost out of the environment that Johnson is. Part of it is that if you look at the spending on TV, Johnson and company are outspending Mandela, Barnes and company vastly on the air. Michael's in the opposite situation. He's getting outspent. So how do you reverse that? Well, he wrote a check for $3.7 million post-primary. You need a bigger check because, remember, Michael's one of the primaries saying, I'm not going to really raise money from people. I'll take $500, but I'm not going to raise a whole lot of money. You don't have a fundraising operation set up when you're doing that. So coming out of the primary saying, okay, now I'm going to take donations up to $20,000 from individuals.
Yeah.
Where's your infrastructure to collect those checks? People don't just like write checks for no reason. They don't like to go, oh, you won, here's $20,000. You have to create a relationship. You have to kind of woo them, create fundraisers. That network has not been there so far. Now there's some time left, but that window is closing, right? That is Michaels' challenge. Are you going to dig deep enough in the closing 5 weeks to not get to parity on TV? You can't be 3-1 or 2-1. It has to be like 1.5-1. That's the theory I've heard from operatives of get it close. Go back to 2018. Scott Walker and his allies vastly outspent Tony Evers and his friends over the course of that campaign. The last month, though, is close to parity. And that's when people, the undecideds, whoever they are,
right. Love to meet a group
start to pay attention and tune in is that last 4 weeks. Now is the time to try and close the gap. And if he can't, he can still win. I mean, the environment could end up being, and it's, I saw a story this week, the Google searches for abortion are now down below the economy. Is that a sign that the abortion thing is way, when, I don't know.
Who knows?
So I keep saying that it, you just go historically, it's going to be a good year for Republicans. How good? Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's decent. The tsunami thing has kind of gone out the window. But Michaels, it might be enough if it's a good environment and Ron Johnson pulls him across the finish line, if Ron Johnson wins against Mandela Barnes, that could be enough. Or the reverse could happen. You know, Evers could win and then he helps Mandela Barnes in the Senate race. But for Michaels, you got to get in position to take advantage of the environment. And people I talk to aren't sure he's there, even with these issues like crime and the education numbers out this week, the testing scores.
Right.
You could use as a fodder against Evers, but do you have the resources to do it?
And to tell that story, right? Also with the polling, too, one thing that I kind of compared and contrast this with the September MU poll and a new AARP poll that was out Thursday is that it appears that Republicans, Ron Johnson and Tim Michaels, are getting a little bit of an edge. They're kind of moving a little bit closer or they're above their opponent. Of course, we knew Ron Johnson was behind 7 points. Now he's above Mandela Barnes. If you look, Tim Michaels and Evers have always been kind of neck and neck. Evers had a little bit of an edge. But when it comes to those voters 50 and up, which is one of the largest demographics that votes in almost every election, he has an edge over Evers in that specific group. And Johnson and Michaels in that AARP poll have a pretty big edge with independent voters, right? Where are those independent voters? We don't know, but we know those are the people that are going to decide in these final weeks. So I will give credit. It appears that even though Tim Michaels isn't doing as much media, or at least, you know, we haven't been invited to many events or, getting advisories of where he's going. Maybe this strategy is working for him. I talked to Charles Franklin, who, of course, is the poll director at MU yesterday, and he said it's a strategy that other candidates are using in other states. Yeah. They're kind of backing up a little bit from the media. Maybe they don't need all the headlines. But, you know, on the opposite side of that, you're not really explaining to voters a lot about your plans, or you're not facing tough questions from reporters about, yes, you have A, B, and C, what you want to do if elected, but how are you going to pay for it, and how is it going to work? So, all right, let's get to Falling this week. We have Jessica Katzenmeier, who is a Senate candidate.
So, one, we had new numbers in this week for everybody, state candidates. In the Senate races, she is well behind Rob Hutton for cash on hand. Now, she was not known as a particularly strong fundraiser going into this race. She lost a 2020 race for the Assembly to Joe Sanfilippo, Republican, suburban Milwaukee. Underperformed Joe Biden like 10 points in that seat. She won the primary, even though she was outspent in the primary by her opponent Tom Palsowitz. So here you now come in the general election where you've only got about four seats in the Senate people are really paying attention to. And the trouble for her is looking at the effort to save the veto, as they call it, mm-hmm. preventing a two-thirds majority in either house, it is easier for Democrats to do it in the Assembly than the Senate. Republicans began the session 21-12 in the Senate. You need one seat to net in the Senate to get there. Looking at the map, Northern Wisconsin's 25th Senate district is a 50-50 seat on the numbers. It's been trending toward Republicans. Again, the environment could influence that quite a bit. And Janet Buley, the minority leader, is retiring. Open seat, Romaine Quinn, former state lawmaker, is running there as a Republican. Kelly Westland, former aide to Tammy Baldwin, is the Democratic candidate up there. I've already seen the realtors drop $170,000 for Romaine Quinn on paid communications. AFP is doing canvassing from up there. Okay, so there's one you've got to hold for Democrats to, if you want to prevent the two-thirds majority. Jeff Smith over in western Wisconsin, Eau Claire area, he's got a big advantage on his Republican opponent right now, Dave Estes. We talked in the last week with the problems he's had right. in the past. Okay, so there's your defend. Where's your offense? The 19th in the Appleton area, that's been a tough seat for Democrats. It's been kind of like just out of reach. Suburban Milwaukee is a place where things are trending in your direction. Now, the new map, one kind of measure I've seen is it's a 55-45 Republican district, but it's been trending toward Democrats. You need resources to make that happen. She's not getting the resources. And for Democrats in general, when they're looking to invest, they're going, the Assembly's a place to go.
Right.
It's an easier path to hold against two-thirds majority. And you remember, you only need one House to prevent an override, right? Now, this all assumes Evers is reelected. And it matters.
True. Very true.
But look in the Assembly. Democrats are investing heavily in the seats of Steve Doyle and Katrina Shanklin. Doyle has more than $600,000 in the bank at the end of August. Shanklin has about $350,000 in the bank. Those used to be statewide numbers when I first started eons ago for yeah. a race. Now they're Assembly seats. And you're seeing the investments go there. So for Katzenmeier, if you want a shot, you got to raise the money, which he's not doing, or get the cavalry to come help you. The cavalry is going over here because that's the place to go. That's easiest path. But two-thirds, it's a challenging environment. And it's a challenge for Senate Dems in period to say, hey, don't forget about us when the Assembly Dems have like kind of hold the cards right now.
Right. And that we're going to have the new maps go into effect. And mm-hmm. that's going to change the dynamic, too. And there's like new projections out that I've seen that the veto proof majority, supermajority is now, you know, on the edge of Republicans of possibly getting it. I mean, who knows? It's just a projection. Right. But I mean, if so, if Evers is reelected, I mean, they're going to bring back abortion bills to the floor, education, guns. I mean, the whole kind of spiel of the multiple vetoes Evers has issued.
In the Assembly, you start out 61-38, so you got a net five. You look first, Sarah Rodriguez running for state lieutenant governor. Her seat got redrawn to be way Republican, so they're 62, right? They're going to win that one without much of an effort. Then you got to go win the two Northern Wisconsin seats. They're in Buley's Senate district. They're, again, 50-50-ish seats, mm-hmm. very trending Republican over the last decade, so challenge. Okay, I guess 64. Then you got to beat Doyle in a 50-50 seat where he's got $650,000 in the bank. His opponent has less than $12,000, all right? Doyle has been there for a long time as a well-known quantity. Even after that, you have to beat Shanklin in Stevens Point or pick up Gordon Hintz's seat in Oshkosh, they're like 55-56% Dem seats. It is not easy, but you can see the math why that's your your bulkhead against the two-thirds majority in the legislature right now.
Just another story to be told on election night. Yeah. All right, well, that will do it for this week. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Have a good weekend. We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.